Why, yes, people, it is happening again. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, ElectroDragon505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me tell you, this title will go and explain a lot about what this podcast is all about. You see that word animation? Yeah, that basically sums up everything. But specifically, though, in this episode, let me tell you, we actually really do have a very Disney-centric episode for you guys. And honestly, this is all just a massive coincidence, considering that most of the major animation news that we got for you this week is actually all coming from Disney. So, for example, what I'm going to start things off right over here, we're going to be talking about our first ever look on Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2 with the teaser trailer. Then afterwards, we will be paying homage to a great animator at Pixar that we all know as Bud Lucky. Then we are going to talk about The Rocketeer, who is going to be coming back in a very unusual way. Then afterwards, we will be looking at Disney's new schedule and some of the little switch-ups that they have done. And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is go to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. And you can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for our first story right over here, we're going to be talking about a teaser trailer. And surprisingly enough, this actually came in a lot sooner than I expected. Or I feel like it's actually very soon, considering that it was not too long ago that we actually got the trailer for The Incredibles 2, or at least the first full trailer that would be released during the same time as the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. But this one right over here, just like The Incredibles 2, it is actually a sequel from Disney that is highly anticipated. In fact, this is actually one of the most anticipated animated features that are going to be released. And what I'm talking about, of course, is going to be Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Disney's first ever sequel ever since The Rescuers Down Under, or at least the first legitimate sequel, because as you guys probably know with Disney, like, it's very rare that they would actually go and make a sequel. It's like really rarer than a Blue Moon even. I know technically there are some follow-ups that some people would actually count, like The Three Caballeros is technically a sequel to Saludos Amigos, or even the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie is a follow-up to The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. But they're not necessarily direct sequels per se. Wreck-It Ralph 2 and Rescuers Down Under, they feel a lot more like a step up or a follow-up from the originals like Wreck-It Ralph and The Rescuers. But yes, after all this time, the public has finally gotten their first ever official look of what the movie is going to look like. The last time that anybody has actually seen footage is actually back at the D23 Expo, where apparently they showed one clip that featured a whole bunch of cameos from the Disney princesses, where apparently Vanellope goes into the world of OhMyDisney.com. Now, we didn't necessarily get it right over here, but what we did get instead is actually a teaser trailer. And it's actually quite interesting how it is a teaser trailer, and yet it's actually a pretty long trailer. It's actually fully 2 minutes. But then again, I guess you can argue that, yeah, it is a teaser trailer, considering that it is something that doesn't fully explain the story. It just gives us a tiny little taste of what's to come. So, with all that said and done, let me explain to you a little bit of what this teaser trailer showed us about what's going to happen in Wreck-It Ralph 2. Now, the owner of the arcade, which is an homage to one of the referees for Twin Galaxies, he decided to go and finally get some internet onto the arcade. So he bought, he pretty much got like this wireless connection cable, and he's officially booting up his computer to go and start having Wi-Fi onto the arcade. And from there, Ralph and Vanellope got a little bit curious, and they decided to go inside the internet to see what it is, or just to go into this new cabinet that they thought it was a new video game called, like, Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi or something like that. So they decided to check it out, and from there, they would go and explore the world of the internet. And what seems to be happening is that they could also go into, like, the whole World Wide Web. It's not just limited to the old man's computer, but also, like, you go into the entire world of the internet, where they even entered upon this little girl's iPad, where she's playing this cute little kids game where Bunny eats pancakes and Kitty eats milkshakes and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty much the insanity that we got in Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. And honestly, in terms of the reactions that I got from it, like, it's very interesting because you can pretty much cut it into three separate parts where you got the beginning, you got the middle, and then you got the end, like right after you see the logo of Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Now, I will say, the beginning is a great startup. Like, that is the one that really, you could technically just show that, and that would actually make a legitimate good teaser trailer, and actually put emphasis on the teaser part, and would end up making it as long as the Incredibles 2 teaser trailer, where you just see Jack-Jack walking around creating the logo for the Incredibles 2. Now, that one was actually great, and a lot of people say that, like, what the old man is showing is kind of outdated technology, but then I actually saw this tweet coming from a Best Buy employee saying that what they're depicting in Wreck-It Ralph 2 in the teaser trailer here is actually very truthful, considering that many people like that guy's age, they would go in and be very late bloomers in terms of the internet. Like, yeah, like, even his computer that he had, it was very old, and you could tell that he doesn't really have that much of a knowledge on the internet. Like, including, if you look closely, like, when he was about to click on his computer going into the internet itself, like, you see that he spelt it wrong. Like, instead of internet, like, the last E is actually an A. So, he doesn't have that much knowledge on the internet and just goes with what he knows. And honestly, it's a very nice touch and a very nice detail with what they're doing. And honestly, I feel like it's a great setup for what could be to come. But then you got the middle part of the trailer. And honestly, that's probably the most disappointing part for me. Or I wouldn't necessarily say disappointing, but probably the most lackluster. Because once Ralph actually gets into the internet, that's when you start to see the common internet jokes. That's when they're doing some of the more obvious stuff, like doing cat-related humor, or like you see a bunch of spam coming in, like just mentioning, like, oh, hey, check it out, you're a winner. Oh, look at these child stars that got arrested and all that kind of stuff. Like, those are honestly internet jokes that have already been done numerous of times before. But I will say, though, the animation that is crafted from what we saw in that little piece, like when you see the world of the internet, I will admit that is highly impressive and it really does look nice. But I will mention right now, though, that there is one little fear that I do have for this movie in general. And maybe it's an absolutely ludicrous and insane accusation, but honestly, when watching this, I did get a little bit of Emoji Movie vibes. Now, I'm not saying that as, like, this is going to be godforsaken garbage and an absolute disaster of a movie. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that the aesthetics really do look familiar, where you see the main characters entering upon this digital world, or in this case, the whole internet, and the buildings and the areas, they're pretty much based on real-world products. And you actually do get to see that in here, where you see at one point there was a logo of IMDb, and then Ralph and Vanellope would go onto eBay. And they would go and check out the stuff that they have in there, and then they see that portrait of a sad cat where they say that it will haunt their nightmares and stuff like that. Like, honestly, at that point, that's where I did get a little bit worried, and if we might see a little bit of similarities, like maybe not plot-wise, but mainly aesthetic-wise with the theming and the tone and all that kind of stuff with what they're doing with the Emoji Movie. And especially one thing, like the whole spam messages where you see people surrounding Ralph telling them about like these spam links and like, congratulations, you're a winner and all that stuff. Technically, I think that was already done in the Emoji Movie as well. So that's one thing that I am worried about. But then again, you could argue that technically those aesthetics, they can also be applied to the first Wreck-It Ralph, where technically you don't see real-world properties where Ralph and Vanellope would get into, but technically, like, Ralph is in this digital world, in this case, the arcade world, and you do see recognizable characters, like characters that do already exist, like Bowser, M. Bison, Dr. Eggman, and all those characters. So there is a little bit of a similarity, and I guess in that tone, they do try to keep it similar. But I guess, all in all, the Emoji Movie really did ruin everything, in a sense, considering that technically Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, did start production way before the Emoji Movie. I mean, keep in mind, with that film, like, the production was literally only 2 years from, like, the birth of an idea to the finished product. So, honestly, maybe it's just a massive coincidence. But then there is the ending, where even if you're not really that impressed with the middle, it will easily get you with the ending, which I think a lot of people can agree is the best part of this trailer. Now, what pretty much happens, it is the part where Ralph and Vanellope, they enter into this little girl's iPad, which, yes, I know a lot of people would point out that it is kind of an Easter egg where the girl looks very similar to baby Moana. And from there, Ralph just got really interested in playing this little game of feeding the kitty milkshake and then feeding the bunny pancakes. But I'm not gonna go way too much into it, but I just gotta say, oh my god, it is probably one of the darkest jokes that Disney has ever done, and probably one of the funniest things that I have ever seen in a teaser trailer. Or at the very least, I think I can safely say that it is the funniest thing that I've ever seen in a teaser trailer for an animated film in 2018. Because really, like, it just go, like, no pun intended considering that it is related to pancakes, but like, it's just layer upon layer of what's happening. And honestly, like, you could just cut it down at the middle and the joke would have worked, but somehow, this little clip just found a way to continue adding on to the joke and actually make it funnier and funnier as it would progress. And probably my favorite part has to be right at the end when you just hear that little pff. It's just like, it's very subtle and it's just very small, but you just hear that little and that is like, it really does explain everything. And then, of course, afterwards, you see the little girl's reaction. Again, I'm not really going to say what it is, but you, honestly, just go see the trailer for yourself. If you haven't seen the teaser trailer, please do so, because that ending really does make it worth it. And honestly, that's where the true humor of this teaser trailer lies. And honestly, overall, considering of all that we got in this teaser trailer with the beginning, the middle, and the end, it does make me a little bit optimistic of what's to come with Wreck-It Ralph 2. Now, honestly, I'm not expecting a whole lot of greatness in there. Now, I mean, the worst case scenario, if we do get a lot of what's happening in the middle, then I would probably expect something in the veins of, like, Early Man, where there were a lot of people that did put in high hopes for the film, especially considering the great reputation of the animation studio and the great reputation coming from the director, but it just came out as good. By the standards of the studio and the director, it's a little bit subpar, but for what it released, at least I could safely say that it's much better than most animated films that I got in 2017. So that's like kind of the worst that I'm expecting from Ralph Breaks the Internet, is that it's good but not great. However, best case scenario is that we would probably get more of the style that we got at the end of the trailer, more so than we got in the middle. Like, the middle is just like a few small things. And like, if we do get more of that, then I think we can get something honestly fantastic right over here. It could actually turn out something that could be as good as the first Wreck-It Ralph. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, I would think that the first Wreck-It Ralph film was honestly fantastic. A great addition to the Disney lineup. And it really does show how Disney can go beyond their usual formula and make something unique, something fresh, something new, even by Disney standards. So honestly, I am pretty optimistic for what's to come with Ralph Breaks the Internet 2, and I really do hope for the best. And keep in mind, this is just a teaser trailer. It didn't even fully show us what's going to be happening in terms of the plot, so maybe we might see something a little bit more different when the full trailer would be released sometime later, maybe in a few months. But I will say that I really did enjoy this trailer, especially with at the end. And if you guys are excited to go and check out Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, then all you have to do is just wait until the end of November during American Thanksgiving for this year. Okay, so for our next story right over here, sadly, I might have to put down the mood on this one, but I feel like it is very important for the animation podcast to discuss about this man, considering that he has made such a great impact in the animation industry. And who I am talking about, of course, is actually regarding Bud Lucky. Now, for those of you who don't know, Bud Lucky recently passed away. In fact, last week, his son, Andy Lucky, actually confirmed that his father passed away at the age of 83. Now, for those of you who don't know who Bud Lucky is, allow me to tell you a little bit of his life story, and you'd probably be surprised that you would be quite familiar with some of his works, and not just as an animator. Now, during his early years, he would actually be serving in the Air Force during the Korean War. But then once that was over, he decided to go and pursue a career onto animation, where he actually did get some schooling from legendary animator Art Babbitt. And then he started his career during the 60s, where he actually worked on a few TV shows and even on some commercials as well, where he did the animation for the Alvin Show. He also did some animation for the Peanuts Gang, Tony the Tiger, and Toucan Sam, and he even worked with a lot of recognizable icons. And then when the 70s rolled along, and it would continue during the 80s, he would actually go and create several animated shorts for Sesame Street. And not only would he would go and animate them, but he would also be voicing them. And he would get a pretty good career from there, making a whole bunch of these shorts for Sesame Street. But then, everything would change in 1992, where really his career would be at his highest point when he was the fifth animator hired to work at Pixar Animation Studios. And from there, he worked as a character designer and a story artist for many of their great films. And for the rest of his career, he would be working at Pixar, where his main thing was actually be the character designer for all three Toy Story films, A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Cars, Ratatouille, WALL-E, and Up. He has actually contributed in some of the biggest and some of the best Pixar films that has ever been done in there. But you might actually be surprised that not only did he actually do some character design and some animations onto some Pixar films, but he also did a couple of voices as well, where you might actually hear him as the voice of Agent Rick Dicker in The Incredibles, in which for the sequel, he will be replaced by Jonathan Banks. And even in Toy Story 3, he actually did the voice of Chuckles the Clown, which you may remember, that's the character where he told the backstory of what happened to Lotso and how he became this evil ruler of the daycare. And it's not just at Pixar where he actually did some voices. He actually did one voice for Disney where he played the role of Eeyore in the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie. But then, I would have to say that if there is one magnum opus that I have to point out about Bud Lucky, is that he is the creator of the Oscar-nominated animated short Boundin', which is the cartoon that actually aired before The Incredibles. And it really is quite a fun and unique animated short. And honestly, I just want to tell you about my little personal experience of how I knew Bud Lucky. Because during my tween years in the mid-2000s, one of my favorite DVDs that I love playing all the time would have to be The Incredibles, because that DVD is just completely jam-packed with numerous of bonus features. Like, Pixar and Disney did a phenomenal job working on that, and even the Blu-ray is just incredible as well, no pun intended. And I remember there was one of them where they actually did put up a behind the scenes on the animated short Boundin'. And from there, you get to learn a lot about who Bud Lucky is and how they created the short and where did Bud Lucky get the idea. And on top of that, I also listen a lot to the commentary of Boundin', where it was mainly Bud Lucky talking about how he created Boundin' and all that kind of stuff. And it really was fascinating to look into this specific animator. And honestly, you could tell how he is quite a unique personality in there, especially how he also collaborated as a voice actor, which, let's be honest, is not really uncommon that some of the animators would end up being the actual voice in a Pixar movie. Like, there are plenty of great examples out there, like how Crush is actually voiced by director Andrew Stanton, or I believe, I think it's Peter Chung, I believe? Like, I just want to make sure I get his name right. I do believe his name, is it Peter Chung? No, okay, it's not, hold on a second, I want to get his name right. I should have looked it up before. But just want to see what's his name? Is it Peter? Wait, is it Peter Chung or Peter? No, it's not. Hold on. No, it ain't Peter O'Toole. I'm just Peter Son. Oh my God! Sorry, Peter. Didn't mean to misspell your name. But yeah, like how Peter Son is actually the voice of a few characters, like Emile from Ratatouille, or even the crazy the crazy Triceratops in The Good Dinosaur, a movie in which he actually directed. And a few other roles as well. And even Lou Romano is actually an artist at Pixar. And he ended up doing some voices as well. And it actually is quite fascinating how Pixar would still keep that tradition alive. And how Bud Lucky is actually one part of that as well. Especially the funny thing with Bud Lucky is that he does have this very recognizable, low, booming voice that really was perfect for characters such as Agent Rick Dicker. And even for Eeyore, it really was a bold move for Disney to do that. But they did manage to find a way to actually make it work, especially when one of the plot lines for the 2011 Winnie the Pooh movie actually did center all around Eeyore. So he really did have a shining moment as a voice actor in there. But I must say that there is one significant thing other than Boundin' that he really made such a huge impact in the animation industry. And there is one story that I've heard about Bud Lucky that really did change the course of, like, the entire animation industry in general, but I guess it's more for one specific movie in general. But yeah, like you could tell, like it is kind of a big change, because the thing is with Bud Lucky is that he was actually the one who first suggested to make Woody a cowboy, because back during production they were considering to have Woody to be this ventriloquist dummy. But then later on, they decided, hey, you know what? In order to have a great contrast with the new toy, which is Buzz Lightyear, and he's like this major space ranger, why don't we have Woody be this cowboy, where the kid was once completely obsessed with cowboys, and now he's completely obsessed with space exploration and all that kind of stuff. So that was a major impact that he has done. And there is one more thing that I do want to state about when Andy Lucky actually did mention about the passing of his father, is that, just want to read a little thing from the animation magazine. Andy Lucky states in his post that in lieu of flowers, the family encourages donations to the California Institute of the Arts, the Bud Lucky Scholarship Fund. So I think that's actually a great way to really honor his works. And really, he has done a great job with many different animated products, and especially how, like, it really touched upon many generations, rather it be back in the 60s with the Toucan Sam, with the Fruit Loops and Frosted Flakes commercials, or maybe in the 70s and 80s when he did all those Sesame Street shorts, or even like in the 90s and onward, where he actually worked on a lot of the Pixar films. I mean, honestly, we owe a great gratitude for Bud Lucky. And honestly, he has done such a great job. And honestly, it is admirable both as an animator and as a voice actor with what he has done. And honestly, all I could really say to Bud Lucky at this point is just really, thank you so much for the great work that you have done and really shaped up a lot of people's childhoods with some great and entertaining stuff. And honestly, like, I will keep watching Boundin' in your honor. It is still a great and enjoyable animated short, and it really was a lot of fun. So really, just thank you so much, Bud Lucky, for your great accomplishments. Okay, so for our next story, let's go ahead and lighten up the mood in this podcast, and let's actually go ahead and discuss about a cult favorite property, The Rocketeer. Rather it be from the Dave Stevens comic books, or even the 1991 Disney movie, a lot of people do have great fondness over The Rocketeer. But it seems like now Disney has announced that they are bringing back The Rocketeer in a pretty special way. So, let me ask you guys, are you ready for the return of The Rocketeer? Yeah! Are you ready to see it come back as an animated series? Yeah! Alright! That's great, because soon we are about to see The Rocketeer come back on Disney Junior! Yeah! Oh, wait, what? And yeah, that's kind of the big twist right over here. Yes, The Rocketeer is actually going to be coming back as an animated series on Disney Junior. So apparently, what Disney Junior said is that they started production on this Rocketeer series that is going to be aimed for kids ages 2 to 7. So let me go into my source here on Deadline, reading to you guys what's pretty much going to be the plot of this series. And it says here, The Rocketeer follows Kit, a young girl who receives a surprise package on her birthday, revealing that she's next in line to become The Rocketeer, a legendary superhero who has the ability to fly with the help of a rocket-powered jetpack. Armed with her cool new gear and secret identity, Kit is ready to take flight and save the day with her gadget-minded best friend Tesh and airplane mechanic uncle Ambrose, who join her on epic adventures. Each episode of The Rocketeer will feature a pair of 11-minute short... Sorry about that. For some reason I couldn't speak. Let me try that again. Each episode of The Rocketeer will feature a pair of 11-minute stories and include an original song. And this will be executive produced by Nicole Dubuc, who also worked on Transformers Rescue Bots. The series will be produced by Wild Canary in association with Disney Junior. So that's pretty much the big thing, is that The Rocketeer is going to be coming back as a Disney Junior series. Now, for me, I'm not necessarily too familiar with The Rocketeer. I haven't really seen the movie, and I haven't read any of the comics, so I decided to do a little bit of research just to know a little bit of what The Rocketeer is. And honestly, I am quite surprised. And I do understand that technically it is a comic that did start back in the 80s, and it's meant to be an homage to the classic comics that were released back in the 50s and even back to the 30s. But honestly, one thing that I am debating is regarding the age group of who The Rocketeer is meant for, because from the stuff that I've seen in the comics, like just looking up at a picture in, well, at several pictures on Google Images, I don't think The Rocketeer is something that's meant specifically for kids, because there's a lot of dark imagery and there's a whole lot of sexy imagery. There's one picture in particular that seems to be pretty famous in terms of The Rocketeer, is that you got a picture of what seems to be the love interest, and she's pretty much posing exactly like she's ready for a pinup, where she's like completely naked, her arms are covering her boobs, and she's like, oh my god. And honestly, like, I'm just looking at all this stuff that's happening in The Rocketeer, and there's also like another one right over here, what seems to be the cover for a special edition of the first Rocketeer comic. And it even says like Rocket's Red Glare, and you see a few pictures. Like, you see like some guy in an airplane that's just shooting up the Rocketeer, and like you see like the villains are starting a fight, and then suddenly like the girl is about to make love with one of the guys. And honestly, I was just thinking, how the fridge do you go from this to like a children's cartoon? And especially like looking back into what I've heard about the stuff about the Rocketeer movie from 1991, wasn't there Nazis that were also involved, at least in the movie? I know it's not necessarily as completely sexy or as dark as what the comics would depict, but honestly, like, there's a lot of like adult subject matter inside the Rocketeer, and yet they decided, hey, you know what? That's actually the perfect subject to make a children's TV show for kids between 2 and 7. I'm not saying this is a bad idea or anything. I just find it to be so weird. It's a little bit like you want to go and make a children's series based on a Quentin Tarantino movie. Like, imagine, like, you got a whole bunch of little kids in a playground going, all right, guys, we're here for two things. Scalping Nazis and have fun. Oh boy. Oh, I hope we're doing it in a way that is safe. Oh no, kids. This guy doesn't want to talk. You know what that means? It's time for the bear Jew to come out and play. Come on, kids. Let's call him out. Come on out, bear Jew. And you know what's actually the saddest thing is that with that cartoon series, I wouldn't be surprised if they would go and find a way to really cram in Tarantino's foot fetish and someone actually saying the N-word. So who knows how that could go. Okay, so anyways, going back into The Rocketeer. Yeah, honestly, it is a weird subject. But yeah, technically it is true that Disney does, like, they do actually own the rights to The Rocketeer, but it really is just a strange subject. It's honestly very... I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I just find it to be a really weird idea that you decided the subject of a children's TV show is going to be The Rocketeer. I don't know where you're going with it, but if you can manage to make that work, then maybe you can. I'm not saying, like, again, I'm not saying this is a bad idea, but, you know, honestly, this could be something. They could actually try to go and work this out, or at least just stick to at least the bare minimum of what the Rocketeer is, and maybe you'll have something great out of it. Like, I've honestly heard a lot of, like, rumors and stories that Disney is considering to make, like, some reboot of the Rocketeer or something like that, but I guess for now, this is going to be the closest thing that we will get. So, if you guys are interested to see what a children's version of the Rocketeer will look like, then all you have to do is just wait until the series comes out on Disney Junior in 2019. Okay, so for our next story that we have right over here, we got one more Disney story to talk about for you this week, and that is actually going to be related to their brand new schedule. Now, the big significance with this schedule is that Disney updated their list so that they would be releasing brand new movies that will go all the way up to the beginning of 2023. And they've pretty much added a total of 25 new additions. We don't even know what they are. They're just untitled that are going to be all live action films, animated films from both Disney and Pixar, and all from Marvel films. Interestingly enough, they didn't even add any of the ones for Star Wars, or I don't know if they would even count the live action films as Star Wars movies. You know, that is honestly a little strange, but let's just go ahead and roll with it. Now, they did also do a little bit of changes in terms of a few significant live action movies that they've had, and that is actually specifically related to Avengers Infinity War and the live action remake of Mulan. Now, first and foremost, you got Avengers Infinity War, which is probably the biggest news, where they decided to do this little marketing strategy with Robert Downey Jr., where they would go and bump up the release date, where instead of being released in May 4th, it would be out on April 27th. So it's not going to be in 2 months. It's going to be in less than 2 months. So that's just a little something to hype up the fans for. But then you also got Mulan, and that's probably the biggest significance in terms of what they've changed, because previously, Disney originally scheduled it to be out on November 2nd of this year. But considering that we didn't really get much information, we didn't get like a teaser trailer, we didn't get like a list of the full cast or anything like that, they are actually going to be delaying it to March 27th, 2020. And those are the only significant changes that they've really done. And they've also added some other information where apparently the live action remake of Winnie the Pooh officially now has a title where now they are calling it Disney's Christopher Robin. So that's the legitimate title. So the Disney's part is actually pretty important, and I guess they really want to try to differentiate themselves from the recent film Goodbye, Christopher Robin. That could be the reason, I don't know. But also, there are two other movies that apparently they decided to go ahead and take out from their schedule. The first one is actually Nicole, which is a holiday comedy that would have starred Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader. But interestingly enough, that doesn't mean the movie is going to be canceled. They did actually announce that instead of being completely shelved or in development, they're actually going to take Nicole and they're going to put that on their upcoming streaming service. So instead of putting it in theaters, they're just going to put it in there. And another one that they did remove is what it says here, using my source here in the animation magazine, is the untitled Disney Toon Studios movie, which I'm mostly guessing is Space, which is the movie that they revealed at last year's D23 Expo, which is another spin-off of Cars. So I'm pretty much guessing that it is that film. And it was originally scheduled for April 12, 2019, but we don't really have word of what's happening with that film. But so far, all we know There could be a possibility its fate could be similar to Nicole, and they'll just put it onto the streaming service as well. So that's pretty much the big thing that's going on right over here. And speaking about my source, the Animation Magazine, they actually did a really good job about the schedule and what's to come. Like, they pretty much listed everything all nice, all in order. They pretty much made it very well organized, where in here, you actually do see, like, they separated everything from the animation, the Marvel films, and the live-action films, and they pointed out which ones are, like, which ones switched release dates, and which ones are the new additions. So, they did a great job organizing this. But I think, from what I see here, the biggest significant change is actually with the Mulan live-action remake, where a lot of people say that it is kind of unfortunate that it is delayed to 2020, but let's be honest, that is something that is really expected, considering that there was absolutely no word from last year's D23 Expo, and when they revealed their schedule, you don't actually see Mulan in place, so it was pretty obvious that they would delay it in 2020. In fact, this news right over here that they actually pointed out, for me, it actually says that Disney is still positive to go ahead and make this live-action remake of Mulan. Because let's be honest, the only thing that we know so far, or the last piece of big news, is the fact that they hired Chinese actress Crystal Yu to be Mulan. And that's pretty much it. And if it would have been released in November of this year, then we would have already gotten a whole lot of information. Like, for now, we know a lot more info about the live-action Lion King remake more than we do than the live-action remake of Mulan. Like, at this point, not only would we know about the full cast and which characters are going to be there, but we would already know about the teaser trailer. We would already have our first look at this point. But now that doesn't seem to be the case, and yeah, it's not really that surprising that, like, right now, it's already there to begin with. Like, now it's just delayed up till 2020. So, it's not really that surprising, but it really does say a lot that they do still believe in making this film. They just need a little bit more time. And, yeah, that does make sense. I mean, it's not like they can delay it until 2019. They can't put it next year because it's already jam-packed with a whole bunch of live-action remakes. Like, we already got Dumbo, we already got Aladdin, we already got The Lion King, so adding Mulan would be a little bit too much, and it would emphasize, you know, it would be a little bit jarring to have all these live-action remakes come out at once. So just do a little bit at a time and just put Mulan there. But yeah, that's pretty much the whole news that we got right over here. So you guys are getting Avengers Infinity War a week earlier, and we're just gonna have to wait a couple more years for Mulan. It's not that much of a sacrifice, but hey, at least it'll work out. I'm sure it will. And so finally, we shall now go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And what I decided to go with this week is to talk about the biggest movie news story of the week. Like, this is not just something that encompasses animation. This encompasses movies in general. Like, we're talking about an entire studio, and I think you know exactly which one I am talking about. This is actually regarding the Weinstein Company, because my God, this was really a roller coaster of news with what's been released right over there. So let me just talk to you about what the first big story was at the beginning. Now, originally, there was supposed to be a deal between the investor group by Maria Contreras Sweet and Ron Burkle. They were supposed to completely buy the Weinstein Company for a total of $500 million for the company itself and all the debts that they had to pay, and also an additional $9 million or $90 million to pay off for all the victims that were pretty much sexually harassed or assaulted or even abused by Harvey Weinstein. Like, the deal was about to be made, but then the Weinstein Company called the deal off, and instead, they mentioned that they would rather go be bankrupt. And they even announced that the deal is completely off, and they're planning to go and be bankrupt. So a lot of people were pretty much discussing about what was going to happen when the Weinstein Company would be bankrupt. And it really did seem like a bad sign right over there, considering that it was a scenario where everyone would lose. Not just the Weinstein Company, but also for the victims as well, because they wouldn't actually get paid if the Weinstein Company would go into bankrupt, because there's a whole bunch of legal stuff going on, what they have to take priority with, and any settlements, any cases regarding the victims would have to be put on hold in that case. And this was actually caused by the New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, where he actually stepped in and filed a lawsuit for another of Harvey Weinstein's crazy, stupid shenanigans. So that was pretty much happening throughout the whole week. And the fate of the Weinstein Company was very questionable. And we were pretty much wondering, how is the company going to die at this point? But then suddenly came March 1st. And probably the most unexpected thing happened. It's almost as if fate was pretty much written by godforsaken M. Night Shyamalan, because it was an insane twist. It looks like now the deal was actually officially made, where the Weinstein Company agreed to take the deal by Maria Contreras-Sweet and Ron Burkle. So first off, let me just go ahead and just read a little bit of a source here from Deadline, which was said by Eric Schneiderman, where he stated, "The deal provides a clear path for compensation for victims and protects the jobs of our employees. We greatly appreciate the efforts of Attorney General Schneiderman and his staff, Maria Contreras-Sweet, Ron Burkle, and his team." Oh, wait, was it not him that said that? Oh, no, No, that's actually a quote from the board. Maria Contreras-Sweet, Ron Burkle, and his team at UKIPA to bring about this agreement. We consider this to be a positive outcome under what have been incredibly difficult circumstances. So, it looks like it is official. The deal is officially set. So, the board of directors finally got their money to pay off all the debts and stuff like that for the Weinstein Company. And also, not just that, but probably the best outcome that would actually come out of it is that the jobs at the Weinstein Company are pretty much protected, and the victims are going to get compensation. So at least those settlements are going to be done, and hopefully the victims will be at peace with the situation. So the big question is, what's going to happen with the Weinstein Company? Well, apparently what seems to be the big thing is that the investor group decided they're going to go and take the Weinstein Company and form a brand new studio on it. And not just that, but they're also going to be switching up the board of directors, where the majority of it is actually going to be women. In fact, let me go ahead and read a statement from Maria Contreras-Sweet herself. And it says here, "Our team is pleased to announce that we have taken an important step to have reached an agreement to purchase assets from the Weinstein Company in order to launch a new company with a new board and a new vision that embodies the principles that we have stood since we began the process last fall. Those principles have new wavered and have always been to build a movie studio led by a board of directors made up of a majority of independent women, save about 150 jobs, protect the small businesses who are owed money, and create a victims compensation fund that would supplement existing insurance coverage for those who have been harmed. The cornerstone of our plan has been to launch a new company that represents the best practices in corporate governance and transparency. The next step represents the best possible pathway to support victims and protect employees. We are grateful to the New York State Attorney General's Office for their efforts in helping us reach an agreement, and we are grateful to our investors who have believed in this process and in the compelling value of a female-led company. We also want to thank all the parties who returned the negotiation table to help us reach this development. I have long-standing commitment in fostering women's ownership in business. This potential deal is an important step to that end. So that's pretty much the big thing. And we now have a happy ending to this Weinstein Company scandal, or what's going to happen to the Weinstein Company. And honestly, I just feel like maybe this is not going to be a full closure, but this is definitely a great step to a closure to these victims. And of course, before I continue, I just want to mention, considering that this is the animation podcast, of course, I would like to mention as well about some of the animation involvements with the Weinstein Company. And I'll just say right here, right now, that when it comes to the Weinstein Company, yes, they have produced some of the best movies in recent years. But my God, when it comes to animated films, it's a little bit like Sony Pictures Animation in a way that when you see that logo come up in front of an animated feature, all you can do is just wince and go, "Ooh, crap. Oh God, we're not into something good, are we?" And you know, it's actually very sad because technically, the best movie that they have actually released, or the best animated film that they have released, is Hoodwinked. Now, take that as you will, but yeah, I would say that Hoodwinked is probably the best Weinstein animated feature that they have released. Close to second would be Leap, or what other people know as Ballerina. The rest of the stuff that they've released, or that's associated with the Weinstein Company, my God, we have seen some major crap from them. From Hoodwinked 2, to Escape from Planet Earth, to what else was there? To like the Nut Job movies, and many, many more. Like, the Weinstein Company is not a name that you can really trust with animation. And you know, the ironic thing is that last year during the summer, the Weinstein Company announced that they would actually have an animation section, which I think they call it Misfits or something like that, where they devoted themselves to go and release and to distribute animated features. Now, they would mostly go and pick things up from all around the world so that they could go and show it off in North America and other countries. But that's pretty much all they do. And even at that, they don't really do a good job. I remember they were supposed to be releasing this foosball movie in an English dub. It was this, this animated film from Argentina. And it was about foosball. And it didn't really work out that well. It ended up being canceled. Not really canceled. It was supposed to be released in theaters, but the plans were pretty much scrapped and it ended up just being released on Netflix. So yeah, that's pretty much the whole thing with the Weinstein Company. But yeah, with this right over here, I think it's pretty much safe to say now that the Weinstein Company as we know it is officially dead. And the remains of the dead Weinstein Company is going to be used to create a brand new studio. And, you know, honestly, I feel like the best case scenario really did come out right over here, because I've seen some people celebrating when the Weinstein Company say that they're about to go bankrupt. But honestly, that wasn't really that great of a news, because at that point, like I said before, it was a scenario that everyone would actually lose. Even the victims would not be able to get compensated. But I think right over here, this really is the best case scenario for everyone. For the people of the Weinstein Company to sell off the company, for the company itself to to be completely reshaped in a way that would be new, that would be fresh, that would be like something, hopefully something that's respectable. And it's great for the victims as well, that they can find, like I said before, it would be kind of the first step of a closure. And you know what? Honestly, looking at this news, seeing like everything that's happened to the Weinstein Company, I think this really does show the power of the hashtag MeToo movement. It really does present the capabilities and the power that it really has and the influence within the film industry and even in the entertainment industry in general, where it's not just taking down powerful people like Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, but it is also capable of taking down empires. Like, this is literally the company that has Harvey Weinstein's name on it, and they're able to take it down so that it could be transformed into a female-led new movie studio. And it really is powerful. And now looking back at the hashtag MeToo movement, it really is going strong. And I mean, it's not just for the subject of like sexual harassment in the entertainment industry. This really is a movement that's giving victims a voice. And I think that's really the biggest impact about the hashtag MeToo movement, is that it gave the ability to give victims a voice. And it could be based on anything. It's not just on sexual harassment. And I think a great recent example of how the hashtag MeToo movement is actually a great influence is actually recently with the Parkland shooting, where beforehand, we wouldn't even take a chance to listen to teenagers. Like, we would just mostly be seeing them as like kind of like these tough kids that they think they're adults, but really they're just kids in general. And they would always go like, yeah, whatever. Always keeping their eyes on their cell phones. And really, nobody would look at them and take them seriously. But nowadays, we do listen to the victims. Gun control is a hot button topic in America right now. And the victims, and well, I wouldn't say the victims, the survivors of the Parkland shooting, they've really made themselves an activist icon and even an American icon, where people like Emma Gonzalez are how, they're pretty much how real Americans should think and how real Americans should be, demanding to have strict gun control in America so that stuff like the Parkland shooting and any other form of mass shootings can stop happening. To have strict gun control, to have a ban on assault rifles, and all that kind of stuff, to really be serious. That the problem, it's not video games, it's not movies. The reality and the truth is that guns are the problem. And they're not going to shut up until the day that gun control does happen in America. And really, like I said before, that really is the power of the hashtag MeToo movement, where it's giving people the opportunity so that if they are victims of a really bad tragedy or if something really bad has happened to them, we are finally giving them the opportunity to have a voice, for them to go and speak out. And really, look at what happened. This is really caused by the hashtag MeToo movement, where they called out and opened up about what Harvey Weinstein did, and now his company is pretty much destroyed in shambles, and now it's going to be led by women. And honestly, this is really a great step in the right direction to not just the entertainment industry, but really to our culture, where sexual harassment will no longer be tolerated, and it will be reshaped in a way where, like, really, we can have another step to gender equality, where people can have respect for each other, and that we will look at each other not just for our bodies, but for the skills and the intelligence that we do have. And honestly, like, it's such a fascinating sight. And what happened with the Weinstein Company is a great example of it. That the hashtag MeToo movement is capable of not just taking down powerful people, but powerful empires. And with all that said, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go ahead and find more of my work on film-book.com. Just search for Metzger Brunette or the Animation Podcast. You can also go ahead and find me on Twitter at Anime505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and rate and review this episode? That would be awesome. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!